Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show.
Today's guest is James Packer, a cybersecurity and cloud specialist, blogger and writer. Well, thanks for this, mate. I'd like to say I'm very much looking forward to this. It's, security is really compelling to me. It's something that I seem to be learning more and more about seemingly, every week. We've, even to the point of kind of just working on things like GDPR at the moment, which I'm sure most organizations or people of any kind of responsibility are being made aware of. And I think inevitably security and the presence has just been heightened over, public events and things that, obviously the NHS situation and various others. It's something that people are very much aware of, but I still think that it's kind of at the stage where people kind of go, oh, I'm scared of that, and I think I'm supposed to be scared of that, and that seems like it's really important, and I'm kind of loosely talking about it, but I really don't understand what's going on. So I think, like most of the other bandwagoners, I was one of those who tried to learn as much as I could about it from as many different people as I could. So with that kind of very layman introduction to security out of the way, it's very nice to have you on to hopefully break down some of the really interesting things that are going on in security and hopefully continue to educate me in some way, which is always challenging. So good luck with that, mate. But the first thing that I definitely want to get into is, we obviously connected because you were actually collaborating on our Venturi's Voice blog on a piece on kind of Meltdown Spectre. So I want to, see how that's going and, first of all, how the collaboration is going, but secondly, obviously, to get stuck into that topic to some capacity, and how you've come to the point where you feel kind of compelled to actually start to write and contribute to the subject.
Yeah, I mean, I think we take the Spectre Meltdown vulnerabilities for the example. It's a thrilling time to be in cybersecurity, that's for sure. And these vulnerabilities themselves, they highlight a number of common traits in cyber, in technology, in people, and it's quite remarkable to see that we are still in a scenario where vulnerabilities that are 20 years old are still being discovered. The research that I've done and the kind of the root cause identification of this, it actually goes right back to June last year, where there were teams of independent researchers at universities dotted across the globe who were, for one reason or another, doing certain types of deconstruction right down at that processor level and just so happened to be testing some of their theories at the time that they stumbled across the vulnerability. Of course, one team, they then raised it with Intel to say, hey, guys, we've discovered this. This seems pretty serious. It kind of bypasses some of the really fundamental security controls within the processor. Do you know about this? And much to their surprise, Intel said, yes, we do. You guys are not the first. In fact, you guys are the fourth set of researchers who have reported that. And what's interesting is that whilst it seems like there's a coincidence or potentially, some kind of change in technology or, we're doing something a little differently that has made it the case that all of a sudden, this is really easy to discover, this kind of vulnerability. It's not the case. It was pure mathematical chance that these independent researchers were able to stumble across these findings in such a short space of time. And, you know, it goes to show that actually the type of technology that we're working with and the advancements, the constant advancements within the technology, when you take it right back to the core of what it actually is, which is really advanced mathematics, it's so immensely complex that deconstructing it right down to that level, you know, it takes lifetimes to be able to do that. So, you know, the fact that we've stumbled across this vulnerability some 20 years later, it might seem like, you know, somebody did something wrong. Somebody, somebody really missed some code somewhere that they shouldn't have done. But actually, you know, it's just this technology's moved on so quickly. There's reams and reams of code that are, dictate how technologies run these days, that it's impossible for us to be able to go back through all of that and identify it. So it's really, really interesting from that point of view. And then, you know, looking at the global coverage of it, obviously it hit the mainstream media and there was frenzy. You know, the media was all over it. The vendors were, I think they caught a little off guard. It's the case that there was an embargo with the vendors. They knew about this for quite some time, and clearly they were doing a lot of testing to try and come up with patches. And a lot of the vendors have now released patches for these vulnerabilities. But, you know, following it even more closely, it's had mixed results. They clearly weren't ready. The testing had not been completed in a way that they would have liked, because a number of vendors have actually since advised customers to stop applying those patches because of the performance impacts. And I don't mean just Microsoft, which is the most widely reported one. VMware, for an example, below the operating system with the virtualization layer, you know, they've released a series of patches for their ESX hosts that have had really quite significant problems, and they've had to advise the wider community, you know, stop patching, because it's just not the quality of patches that we need. It fixes a vulnerability, but it causes a whole lot of other problems. So it's very, very interesting. There's a lot of different dynamic to it, and of course it's situations like this is what really gets the vendors, the communities, the profession really riled up to say, actually, you know what, are we protected? Are we taking this kind of stuff seriously? And in situations like this, I've seen, you know, you either get, generally speaking, two different types of reactions. You either get somebody who or an organization who's scared by this and kind of doesn't really want to admit that this could affect them. So, you know what, we might just not kind of, we'll react to it. We'll push out the latest sets of Microsoft patches and that's okay. And we're good. We've got a few firewalls. That'll be all right. Or right down to even the home consumer who goes, well, you know what, I haven't got any data that's really worth stealing, or, I'm not going to be targeted. There's massive companies out there that will be targeted. Why would anybody want to bother with little old me? So that, you know, there's that kind of procrastination to actually react to it. Whereas you then get the other extreme, and you know, this is kind of a bit more where I deal with on a day-to-day basis, is, you know, larger organizations that take this very seriously have got very, very complex infrastructures. Deploying patches and fixes for vulnerabilities like these is no small activity by any means, and coordinating that across an estate that is, you know, thousands of servers is a nightmare. My heart goes out to the likes of Amazon and Microsoft and Google, they're dealing with infrastructures of hundreds of thousands of servers, if not millions. I read an article that Microsoft actually ended up taking part of their Azure environment, the West Europe environment, offline for 9 hours in patching for these vulnerabilities. So it's a very interesting situation. There are a lot of different angles to it, and it really raises some interesting questions.
Interesting, mate. Very interesting. And for me, the awareness seems to be kind of a component as well, that whether it's offers as a service or there needs to be that kind of champion internally that's driving the awareness. This is the kind of the starting point, but nonetheless, something that's going to help action different organizations to kind of get on top of these fixes. So, you know, what efforts have you seen now, you know, from a macro perspective, for people to kind of really, you know, raise the awareness and have a generally, you know, what I was alluding to earlier, a better fundamental understanding about the potential risks and how we can counter that.
Yeah, so I mean, I think from the you think it from the perspective of whether it's the home user, the personal user versus the corporate enterprise, there's definitely a case where it's out of sight, out of mind. If they don't see that it directly impacts them, then they might not be motivated to do something about it. And that's actually I've seen circumstances where that seems to be in some cases getting a bit worse. There's some hesitance to really take these issues seriously, because it's potentially somebody else's problem to deal with instead. I take for the example of public cloud computing. The big benefit of public cloud computing being that a lot of the hard work of running an IT infrastructure is outsourced to somebody else. I don't have to worry about disks when they fail. I don't have to worry about powering my data center. I'll pay somebody else to do it. And therefore, some of the security wrap around that, also I'm paying somebody else to do it. But actually, just because somebody else is being paid to do it doesn't mean they're doing it. I'm not by any means saying that the vendors aren't doing it, but you have to check. And that's something that I've seen, that there's a little bit of hesitation to really get stuck in with these big companies who, yes, I'm sure they do absolutely fantastic jobs, but if there's nobody checking up on them, how do we know that that's the case? So what I'm really trying to do, as a security professional, is raise that awareness that cybersecurity, information security, whatever you want to call it, whatever level of technicality you do or don't have, however you interact with technology, it is inherent in our daily lives, and it's everybody's responsibility. I think there's a very, very small percentage of the global population, very small indeed, that do not have some kind of interaction with technology, and therefore different security considerations based on how they use it. And I think that it's really driving that cultural change that it is everybody's responsibility to be kind of conscious of security, just like you're conscious of your own physical security. You should be conscious of your cybersecurity. I mean, you wouldn't get a car and pay lots of money for it, but you'd leave it out on the street, doors wide open, keys in the ignition for somebody to just come and steal it. You'd do what most people would do. You'd put it in a garage, you'd lock it, you'd put an alarm on it, maybe some CCTV. You would put multiple controls around that car to make sure that you're protecting your asset. Well, your data, your digital data is an asset. And it's a principle in cybersecurity of a layered defense, defense in depth. You put those same protection rings around your data. It's a very kind of well-received concept, but often putting it into practice can be challenging. And I think making it clear to whether it's staff, home users, your chief executive or your NAM, making it clear that everybody can play their part is where we really see a cultural shift towards actually these big vulnerabilities that do come out. Yes, they do happen. It's technology. It's built by humans, therefore it's not perfect. But there are things that we can do to protect ourselves, and it's everybody's empowered to be able to do that. And I think that organizations that really want to take their security seriously, but don't know how best to go about doing that, it really starts with the culture. Your biggest weakness in any security system, any technology, it can be as wonderful as you make it. You can spend as much money as you want. But ultimately, if the person who's at the steering wheel drives it into a hedge, there's not really much you can do. And so really starting at the core, cultural change at home or in the organization is really key to progressing your security posture, and really starting also to understand where you may have problems, because ultimately it's your staff who are on the ground working your systems day to day, interacting with your data on a day to day basis. They see what's going on all the time. If they're the ones who are the best positioned to be able to spot when something's not right, tell them how to do that. Tell them how to identify it. Tell them how to report it. Make sure you've got those kind of reporting channels in place, that you've got, whether it's hotlines or a incident management process or anything like that, that can kind of support the employees to be able to, put up that hand when something doesn't quite seem right. And even if it is, something that's perfectly business legitimate activity, at least they've had the kind of the proactivity to flag when they don't think something's right. And, it's turned out to be that everything's okay rather than the other way around. So yeah, it's a big drive in the industry as well. You know, there's right the way across industry events, big vendors who are providing consulting services on how to do awareness training, how to motivate staff, even upskilling staff in ways that they can, you know, be more cyber aware and, you know, outside of just the organization. And it's targeting people who are vulnerable within society. You know, the people who are not so au fait with security, maybe the disabled or the elderly, or even the younger generation who are, you know, using technology at such an alarming rate, yet absolutely lack some of the fundamentals when it comes to how to protect yourself when you're online. It's, you know, it's really, there's a lot going on to try to you know, increase public security awareness right across the board.
Is there any excuse for it? And what I mean by that is sort of, it's such a new career, if you want to call it that, that a lot of people have either shifted from, you know, similar work patterns, or they're just not integrated into it yet. And there's clearly a demand for security talent. But it's still something that continues to evolve and probably always will, as a profession. So, you know, from that perspective, is it just as simple as there's, you know, we can try and raise awareness, but there's not enough people skilled enough who can understand it and then actually implement out there? And, you know, to kind of second that, do you think that, you know, the next generation or over the coming years, we will see a rise in people looking at security as a profession? Because, you know, certainly from our perspective, from a recruitment perspective, there's such a high demand for people who understand and are able to kind of execute within a security role. But there's clearly just not the supply there yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've hit it spot on that. There's definitely is a global shortfall in security professionals. I think the last statistics that I saw was something like 2 million more roles globally than there are people to fill them. So, you know, it is a big problem. And I think that even the British government have recognized that we do have to really encourage the next generation, not only on how best to protect themselves, but try to get them into that security profession and to plug that skills gap. I think it certainly is the case that technology is not going anywhere. Technology only seems to get more entwined into our daily lives. Just look at the Internet of Things, your CCTV cameras, your baby monitors, everything that can connect to the Internet. It's only further seeping into every part of our lives. Security goes hand in hand with that technology. So I don't see the demand decreasing it. In fact, I think it's only going to continue to increase. And I think that is definitely is a big gap, that there are less professionals to fill the roles than there are roles. And it's something that I try to strive. I see a lot of organizations also doing the same kind of thing. The government are investing very heavily in cyber schooling, whether it's reaching out to students who are, you know, right down to the secondary school and in college level, and, you know, some really great grants and funding for doing apprenticeships and graduate degrees in cybersecurity as well. So there's a really big push in that area. I think that, you know, in terms of the gap that we have now, how best to go about addressing it, you do have the flip side of that, though, is that, you know, a lot of the big gap that we have can be filled by new talent, and that is bringing people into the industry. But at the same time, there are a lot of people that are in technology who are just not motivated to move to security, or, you know, they chose the technology path over the security path. And I think that's where we're going to see the biggest change in the coming years, is the appeal for technology as a role, as a job, and as a profession over the last decade has transformed, with how technology itself has transformed. So there's some really exciting stuff that's being done in technology, whether it's your ultra HD TVs through to your AI, your virtual reality, you know, supercomputers, that kind of thing. You know, there's some great innovation within technology. People see that kind of stuff and they want to get involved. And I think that that same trait is going to move into security, because it's such a growing profession there are some really great things that are being done in the profession that are, you know, leading how we're developing technology in a secure manner. And actually, you cast back 20 years or so, security as a profession existed, absolutely. It was a lot smaller. It was a lot more reactive rather than proactive. It was a lot more, security was an afterthought. Security was not a, you know, it was a business disabler, not a business enabler. And that's what's transforming, is that, you know, there are companies that are taking strive to make use of things like public cloud. You're looking at companies who are very agile in the way that they work. They're using very much kind of DevOps, lightweight, quick to the market building. And security has kind of reacted to that, in that security, it tries to, rather than be an afterthought, rather than something that you bolt on at the end of a project, at the end of a solution or a product, it's something that security is best done when you do it by design right at the beginning. And so what that's meant is that there's been a widening in the security industry of the types of skills that are needed. The types of opportunities that are available. The security roles are becoming a lot more devy than they used to be, because applications, mobile applications, web applications are becoming a lot more common. And actually, you'll find that there are security professionals who need to be dual disciplined. They'll need to be both technology experts and security experts, because what they're doing is implementing security within the code of an application. Of course, they need to know how to code in the first place. So, you know, it's hugely expanding industry, very wide reaching skills that are needed. And it's really exciting because of that security going hand in hand with the technology developments. When you think about things like artificial intelligence, you know, the implications for the wider society of using things for like artificial intelligence, they're huge. You know, what we could do if we were able to automate a lot of the processes that we use within society for, you know, whatever that may be, there's huge benefits to society as a whole. Of course, there are risks associated with that, but you could leverage, and people are leveraging, artificial intelligence within security. So, you know, artificial intelligence is being kind of streamlined in a way that actually different tools that are out there across your IT estate that are gathering bits of information here and there and pulling logs, and you know, you've got thousands and thousands, millions of events that some poor soul's got to try and pour their way through and make sense of, okay, we've actually got an incident going on. There are a number of organizations who have kind of already adopted that DevOps approach. They're applying that to security, and it's actually become DevSecOps, where they're kind of tuning the tools and tuning machine learning so that a machine can detect, okay, there's a string of anomalies here, here, and here. When all those variables are met, it can add up to then a security incident based on certain key attributes. And so that's something that's, again, it's hugely exciting, because the prospects for security operation centers globally, how they can react to incidents, how they can present information quickly, how they can report on what's going on, to management, to law enforcement, to various stakeholders, you know, it's been completely transformed, all thanks to that kind of development within security and within technology. So, you know, it's a very exciting industry, and you know, there's some great development that's being done both in the kind of the private sector and public sector by not-for-profit organizations and for, you know, commercial organizations, and it's moving in a very exciting direction. I think that it's certainly not showing any signs of slowing down. So the skills gap is something that's probably going to continue to be a problem for the foreseeable, I think.
What do you think we can do more to get people interested in it? I mean, for me, it's compelling, you know, and if I was already a dev or had, you know, more technically inclined skills, for me, it would seem quite obvious, like if it was, you know, in vast demand. Is it more than that? Is it people have to, you know, I suppose, you know, have a particular approach to the way that they would do security? What do you think it is, and how can we kind of sell it more to people to ensure that, you know, we are getting people to consider this instead of, you know, potentially other technical disciplines?
So I think that the example that I would give that is kind of a bit of a red tape over security is When I hear the description of security industry, what the industry actually is. And by that, so some people may refer to it as cybersecurity, whereas other people refer to it as information security. Now, there's no right or wrong answer, but the impression that it gives to people that you're talking about these roles, this profession, is that when somebody hears cybersecurity, they're like, wow, that sounds really cool. That's like James Bond stuff. You've got to be really, really technical. You're doing hacking, you're doing coding, you're doing far, far more technical stuff than I can do. And that right there is a complete put off, because they're immediately under the impression that I just don't have the skills to get involved in this industry. I can't, you know, it's not for me. I prefer to use a little bit more the kind of information security realm and those kind of terms, because what we're ultimately talking about within security, ultimately, we're trying to protect assets. We're trying to protect data, and we're trying to protect information. Businesses, they conduct themselves using information as their assets, their intellectual property, their documents, their images, whatever it might be. And so on that basis, information security, it kind of, it's a bit more of an open, inviting term to refer to the industry, because, you know, somebody can actually picture it. If I was to say, what does information mean to you? Well, information can mean, it can mean a document I have in my hand. It could be my phone bill that I've got in my hand. That is information. It could be a text message I'm reading on my screen. That is information. It makes it a little bit more open and appealing. I think that's part of the challenge, is that the terminology sometimes puts people off, because you'll see jobs that are advertised as a cybersecurity expert, a cybersecurity architect, a cybersecurity analyst. You know, it's a complete put off for those who don't really understand cyber and information security. They're the same thing. And there are different disciplines within information security. You have the really technical side of it, which are the people who can deconstruct malware and who can put rogue code into a sandbox and pull it apart and understand it at the code level. But then at the same time, you've got other disciplines within security. I talk more about the kind of what's known in the industry as the GRC side, which is the governance, risk and compliance. And this is more about the policies, the processes. So it's the people and the technology. It's a lot more about, okay, we've got the technology in place that can deliver the security requirements that we have. It can actually do the blocking of traffic. It can actually do the detecting of an antivirus. But equally, you need that governance side. You need the process side of it to be able to say, okay, we get an antivirus alert. We've got a virus. Okay. And it says that it's been quarantined. Great. Immediately we think, okay, so the incident is not really an incident. It's maybe been contained. But what do you do with that? I mean, it might happen again. It might happen repeatedly. It might be happening constantly. You need to have those processes in place that say, in these types of scenarios, we will do X, Y, and Z. Likewise, you need to have a look at the security governance from a strategic level to say, yes, we need to invest money in our technology, but we also need to invest money in training our staff. We need to invest money in how are we actually kind of auditing ourselves? How are we monitoring what we're doing? How are we reporting? You know, if we are an organization that provides customers with services, and part of that is security, how do you give them visibility? How do you give your customers assurance that what you're doing, the technology, the wonderful technology you've paid lots of money to implement, is actually doing what it's supposed to do? How do you give them that visibility? That's when you start moving towards the kind of the GRC side of it. And that often doesn't take technical skills to be able to write a process that says, you know, in this scenario, you need to do X, Y, and Z, to deliver security awareness training, you need to sit these people in a room, you need to engage with them face to face, give them interactive content. Don't just give them a PowerPoint presentation to read. Sit in front of them and show them. It's how can you kind of engage a little bit more from that perspective? And again, it doesn't take those technical skills to do that. And I think that's part of the problem, is that it's cybersecurity makes it very, very technical, very kind of a dodgy guy with a baseball cap and a hood over who's walking around hacking people's computers. which it's not. You know, it's, yes, there are people who are like that, and yes, there are parts of the industry that are very technical, who kind of you know, spend a lot of their time focusing on that really in-depth code-based security. But there is equally this whole other side to security that you don't need to be technical to get involved with. And I think it's, there's a lot of work to try to promote both sides of security, but also more so that kind of governance side of it, to try and encourage people to try and remove that red tape, to try and remove the smoke and mirrors that make everybody believe that security is something that it's perhaps not, and to make it a little bit more inviting, to encourage people to want to take up security as a profession.
Mate, I think we're almost out of time here. We're at 30 minutes and I could literally go on and on and on. I know we didn't cover everything we wanted to, but maybe we come back and do kind of a round two, James, because there's certainly so much more to discuss on the subject.
Sure.
But we'll kind of leave it here for now, and then I think let's do a part two at some point. That'd be great.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website venturi-group.com. And keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.